All right, well, we'd love to just start tonight by welcoming everyone to this week's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program on the Citizens Climate Lobby that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is going to focus on rural economic benefits of climate policy. Join Jerry Hinkle, CCL Research Coordinator, for a training on CCL district-specific research that estimates the annual direct revenue accruing to that district from the renewable energy build-out that would result from strong climate policy. This analysis synthesizes the recent reporting done by RMI and work from UPenn researcher Kevin Ummel, and it demonstrates that renewable energy development offers significant rural American economic development opportunities. So we're really looking forward to having a chance to jump right in tonight. Our agenda is straightforward. Jerry is going to give a little background about the benefits, going to explore the policy scenario that set up the research. We're going to talk through some of those estimates of the economic benefits, and then really focus on what the tools are that you can use in your own outreach to your member of Congress's office. A little bit about our speaker. Jerry Hinkle has been lobbying Congress for market-based climate solutions since 2006 and a leader with CCL since 2011. Jerry has served on CCL's governing board for the last 6 years and as the staff economist for the last 4 years, where he educates CCL's volunteers on the economics of climate policy. He holds MA degrees in both economics and in climate policy and has published several articles in these areas. Thank you again so much for joining us tonight, Jerry.
So just a quick shout out. Hardy Alms did a fantastic job with the programming of this fairly intense data. Brian Hermson put together some of the tools that you'll be looking at, including the handouts. So thanks, guys. Great team effort. Here's what we're going to do tonight. I'm going to try to get this done in about 25 minutes and then take some questions. There's a big boost to rural communities that are represented by Republicans from climate policy generally, from the build out of renewable energy. It goes to rural areas. And so we wanna look at that. We're gonna estimate that. We're gonna give a dollar value to each congressional district. We wanna see how we do that, how you can use it in your advocacy. And we wanna understand the specific tools that we will have for you available on community to utilize this information. Background. So climate policy almost certainly expands the growth of renewables, including wind and solar energy. That we know. When that occurs, the benefits, the projects, the wind farms, the solar farms, they go into rural communities. You don't put the wind farm in downtown. You don't put it in the suburbs. You put it where you've got some land. And so it ends up in rural communities. These rural communities are very vastly represented by Republicans. Specifically, what we'll see is that over 80% of the money that will be derived from this renewable energy build out will go to districts currently held by a Republican. So wouldn't it be great if we could derive a kind of a specific estimate of the economic benefits to rural communities from climate policy? Couldn't that assist in our advocacy, especially to Republicans? Well, the answer is yes, we can. And RMI did it about a year and a half ago. RMI is a consultancy, energy consultancy in Colorado. They had been known as Rocky Mountain Institute. They don't go by that anymore. And the analysis that they did, it was by state, not by congressional district. In addition, they took a particular scenario, 90% clean energy in the power sector by 2035. Great stuff. We didn't want to use that. We wanted to get down to the CD level, congressional district level, and we wanted to reflect as best we could the impact of a carbon tax, right? And you know, one of the things that we most like about a carbon tax is, unlike a clean energy standard, like the CEPP, it is economy-wide. it impacts the power sector, but transportation, industry, and buildings as well. Okay, and so we wanted to see that kind of effect. So we came up with our own. Enter our buddy, University of Pennsylvania researcher, Kevin Ummel, who worked with us on the household impact study. And this was his suggestion. He says, NREL, the National Renewable Energy Lab, also in Colorado, has the most detailed state-of-the-art models on energy generally in the US. And they've done a series of studies called the Electrification Futures Study, where they run scenarios to say, here's how energy will be built out in the future over the next 30 years to meet impending demand. And they got a particular scenario that is really demanding. As Kevin describes here, most aggressive decarbonization scenario currently available. He says, I think this is a pretty decent reflection of a strong carbon tax. We did some research, decided I think he's right, so let's go with this. Two elements to this future scenario, if you want. Number one, there's going to be a big build out. There's going to be a big increase in demand for electricity use. Okay. The transportation sector in particular, there's going to be a big movement towards electric vehicles. Okay. But industry and buildings as well. And the second one is associated with this, or at the same time complementing this, the cost of renewables is going to go down more than expected. So with the increase in demand of electrification, you're going to see a lot of renewables built out to meet that demand. So yeah, similar enough. I'm going to skip this. Here we go. Here's where the rubber meets the road. And let's see, Brett, can I get a... probably too late for me to get a laser pointer. Or do you know where I can go to get that?
I think we can see your mouse. So you'll just hover over and we can watch the arrow.
Okay, here's the trend in electric generating capacity from 2018 to 2050 under this low renewable energy cost, high electrification scenario. Interesting. So the time frame that we're going to be concerned with in this analysis is 2020 to 2034. Okay. Because we didn't want to go into the member of Congress's office and say, hey, this is what's going to happen between now and 2050. We wanted to truncate that a little bit. So this is the area that we chose. So let me just go over these with you. Nuclear kind of holds steady, declines slightly. Here's coal. Coal declines due to probably less expensive renewable, but not as much maybe with the carbon tax. Here's a key. These two, the dark purple and light purple, are natural gas. And what you'll see here is they basically stay steady till the end of our period. And then they pick up a little bit to meet this higher demand. So natural gas doesn't go anywhere. And then I'll go to the all important, the renewable area. This aqua blue is wind, and then above it is, this is utilities solar, and then this tiny sliver here gets bigger here. That's rooftop solar. So in 2020, our base year, we have a generating capacity of 220 gigawatts of wind and solar, okay? And what this model is, very detailed, state-of-the-art model, says, and under this scenario, by 2034, that would go from 220 to 990. Okay, important point. If you got a strong move towards electrification with lower renewable energy costs, you're going to see about a quintupling of renewable energy. Okay, nationwide average, it's about 4.5 times. So big increase in renewable energy. Okay, what can we say about the benefits that will go to these rural areas? First of all, so what's going to happen here is you're building out the wind farm, you're building out the solar farm. not all of the revenues will accrue to this area. And the literature is somewhat detailed on, here's what we can say that we know will go there. You know, let me just give you an example. You got the windmills in the background there. The windmills are coming in. Those are expensive, but they weren't built probably in that rural community. They were built elsewhere. So that's not part of the revenue. What is? Number one, these renewable farms are going to be generating a lot of electricity, which generates revenue, and that revenue is taxed. So on average, every year between 2021 and 2034, for 14 years, you're going to get an average of $6.5 billion in additional tax revenues in these rural communities. Nice. Okay, in addition, the farms got to go somewhere. You're going to be leasing land from landowners. That's going to provide payments on average every year of $3.4 billion. The farms are going to have to be built. That's going to generate jobs and construction wages equal to almost $4 billion a year. And then finally, once those wind and solar farms are built, you're going to have to maintain them, operate and maintain them. $3.5 billion a year total. And this is just for the lower 48 states. $17 billion a year in direct revenue. Okay. It's a nice sum of money. And we'll figure out more about that. Where's it going to go? Here's where the detail of the models really come in. Essentially, the assumption, and economists like to do this, is the facilities, the farms will be built such that to minimize the cost of the additional electricity. Okay. So now, but you're going to consider siting and feasibility criteria. You can't build a wind farm anywhere, right? Number two, you're also going to have decent proximity to transmission. And again, this will all be considered in the total cost of producing the electricity. But really what you're going to get here is you're going to start building the cheapest cost facilities first and continue to add capacity until you're getting to where you, until you're meeting electricity demand in this particular scenario. Detailed, they looked at 57,000 potential wind sites, 203,000 potential solar sites. So this is the best we can do at this point. Let's take a look at, I'm going to show you a couple pictures of the distribution. So what you're going to have is those four components of revenue, which is going to come to a total revenue figure for each congressional district. And here's how they're distributed from sort of a political standpoint. As you go from zero and you go to the left, the districts are getting more and more blue. This is victory margin. So these folks won by a whole lot. These folks were a little bit closer. As you go from zero to the right, you're getting more and more red. Okay. And just if you stand back and take a look at this, you can see it's like there's little helium balloons, but the Republicans got a lot more helium in their balloons. These things are taking off on you. There's a lot more of the value going to Republican districts. I also want to note something else. This is nowhere near a normal distribution. There's a whole lot of zeros here. There's a whole lot of congressional districts for whom the sun and the wind kind of pass you by. So you're not going to get anything out of this. And we're just telling it the way it is. This is a huge opportunity for some, modest opportunity for many, and not an opportunity for others. 126 congressional districts with no economic benefit here. But again, in sum, what we'll find, 82% of annual revenue flows to congressional districts will go to congressional districts currently held by Republicans. So possible hook here, possible motivation. Now, I think I'm going to stop sharing here. So we've got an interactive map on community. Super cool. Built by Brian. I'm going to try to share my screen again and go to that. And oh boy, is that it? Okay. So here's the map. This is broken down by congressional district. Here is the color coding. The darker the color, the more revenue, okay? And if you wanna get a general picture, one of the things that you're gonna see is there's a lot of wind in the plains, right? All the way down to Texas, not a big surprise there. There's a lot of sun in the south and in the west. And so you're gonna get some higher values, but there also is some good wind up here in the Northeast and maybe even the Mid-Atlantic. You've got this tool, you click on North Dakota. It gives you the annual revenue. Now here, the state is going to be the same as the congressional district because there's only one, $114 million. And embedded in this is a link to the state report and to the district report. So you can go in and play around with this. And I think generally what you're gonna see is, again, there's a lot of wind in the plains, but also in the Northeast, there's a lot of sun elsewhere. I'm gonna get to those in just a minute. So I'm gonna go back to my presentation. That prior graph had the color coding as a function of revenue. But that's not the best measure of materiality. And the reason is $100 million for California is a whole lot different than $100 million for Kansas, right? So what we've done is we've got a data set that looks at the annual revenue going to the state divided by state GDP. Okay, and I just want to point out, here are the states that really do the best. And it's what I had just mentioned. And these are targets and potential targets. There's a lot of red here. Arkansas, Iowa, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, on and on. West Virginia, there's three congressional districts. 01 gets nothing, 02 gets a little, and 03 really does well. So whoever is representing that district might be enticed by a significant amount of annual revenue coming in every year. So far, so good. We'll get to questions soon here. I'm going to be able to end in about five. I want to tell you two other important things about this analysis that make it a little bit more enticing. First of all, what we've just looked at, what we've estimated, and all we can estimate is the direct economic benefit, the money, the revenue flowing into the congressional district. The total economic benefits will be a multiple, will be several times that. Why? Because the money, the tax revenue goes in, it's spent. You're building out the schools. You're providing additional services. Well, that money, building out the schools, for example, that takes workers, right? So they're getting wages. That, you know, they have to buy groceries and housing. So they're turning over the money in the district. The indirect benefits are roughly, we can't estimate it by district, but it's roughly 3 to 4 times. So when you see a direct economic benefit of $100 million, you should impress upon the member of Congress, and they should know this, the ultimate benefit will be several times that. Kind of important to know, even though we can't estimate it. Also, if you look back at that graphic of what builds out, this is a point that the Columbia report made that I think is important in this instance, okay? This build out of renewable energy is going to replace, by and large, at least over the next 10 years, it looks like over the next maybe 14 years at least and beyond, it's going to replace imported oil and coal. got it about coal. We're not going to get around that. In any good climate policy, coal is going to fall further by the wayside. That's what's going to happen. But natural gas production and oil production in the US are going to hold firm for a long time. That will be important to some members of Congress. So do keep that in mind. It's in the Columbia Report. It's consistent with this. Now, to know that, you're going to have to know the exact policy scenario. And, you know, but again, the Columbia Report was based on the Energy Innovation Act. So we got a good chunk of money coming in. The total economic benefit will be multiples of that. And it should be a net additional economic benefit to those rural communities. And just a quickie on rural communities. They're about 72% of the land mass of the US. They only have 20% of the population, and they only have 10% of the US GDP. Okay, so these are the areas where there's a greater incidence of poverty, for example. They could use the money. This could be really helpful. Finally, just a disclaimer. Here's the model's key shortcoming. The first of all, and this is important to just understand and bring with you into your meetings. Not everybody wants this. We see it time and again in the local news. Some of you, I just saw articles in San Diego. Not everybody wants a wind farm nearby. Not everybody wants a solar farm nearby. So often the build out will be a function of lease cost, but also local politics. You know, if people resist this type of facility coming in, it's gonna be a lot tougher to do. The second thing, obviously, is the scenario. This EFS, low renewable cost, high electrification scenario is, it looks great for what we're doing. Not quite a carbon tax. So at some point, NREL, possibly even late this year, we'll do a carbon tax scenario. And at that time, we may update this analysis. Okay, just I wanna go over briefly with you what you're gonna get, what the advocacy tools are that we have made available to you, okay? That you can access on community. First of all, for every congressional district, except for those 126 for which the value is zero, didn't produce a report for them, you're going to get a nice one-page leave behind similar to what you got for the household impact study. It's going to explain, here's the national benefits. Also, it's not just the national benefits that, you know, there's direct benefits to your congressional district, but there's also the indirect. Please consider that. The total economic benefit is multiples of. And then finally, the direct benefits for your specific congressional district. On a second page, there will be a graph like this for Wisconsin 08. So that's available to you. How do you get there? And how do you get to the interactive map to play around with? You go to community, there's resources and training. If you click that, it will bring up the menu that you can click all resources here. That will bring up a menu, and down, if you scroll down that menu, you'll have local impacts. If you hit local impacts, that's where you'll find this rural economic benefits piece. You can access all this. The state handouts, the CD handouts, and that interactive map as well. That's it.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much again on behalf of the whole CCL community. It is just so helpful to have this information at our fingertips, especially heading into our November lobby days, really being able to leverage and come back to our offices with new information that's going to be really relevant and specific for their district. We always know, research shows, congressional offices want to know about the impacts in their own district, and you're providing exactly that. So we are so grateful for all the time and the work that went into this.
My pleasure, and thank you for your advocacy. I really appreciate it. Good to have you on the team.
Yep, thank you, everyone. Stay safe out there, stay in touch, and we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.